Let's call this meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but when we do, we officially call it to order. First up, we have Representative Fabian on Explore Minnesota Tourism Funding Provided and Money Appropriated. One of my more frequent visitors.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Fabian.
Nice to be here.
Always good to have you here.
House File 435.
Good. There you go.
Or 34, you mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 434 is a bill for the Explore Minnesota Tourism. It's a pretty simple bill. It's two lines. There's funding in there for about $18.9 million per year over in a two-year cycle. We all know that tourism is a very important part of the industry in the state of Minnesota, and rural Minnesota relies heavily on tourism. Living where I do up on or near Lake of the Woods, it's a big deal up there. I was talking to a couple of the resort owners the other night when they were down with the rural electric co-ops. So anyway, what I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is introduce a couple of people who are here to testify on the bill. The gentleman to my left, he thinks he's from northern Minnesota, but he's actually from central Minnesota. This is Mark Novotny. He owns a resort, the Hideaway Resort. I'm not sure if that's a shameless promotion or what, but in the Hackensack area, which is a beautiful area of the state. And I'll turn it over to Mark, and he can do a little presentation, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
I would love it. Just out of curiosity, northern Minnesota, they say, hey? In southern Minnesota, they say, you all. What do they say in central Minnesota?
Something correct.
A combination correct. Thereof.
There you go. Welcome to our committee. Would you please give your name for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and representatives. My name is Mark Novotny. I'm actually wearing three hats today. I'm owner and operator of Hideaway Bay Resort near Hackensack. I'm also past president of Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and I am currently appointed by the governor to the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. So I get a first-hand view of what Explore Minnesota Tourism does, and John Edmund's been doing a fabulous job. When we had our last increase, all of that funding went to advertising. And just as an example, here's the latest in snowgoers, and there's a seven-page ad about Minnesota and the areas to go snowmobiling. Obviously, we haven't had the snow we need. But through his co-op advertising, a lot of the communities and area businesses could get in here for as little as $300. Without that funding that we had through the state, we couldn't even afford to do anything like this. So it's very important that we have that funding. Another one that just came out is Roadrunner, and it's a motorcycle touring magazine. And we have a three- or four-page ad in here as well with co-oping with Explore Minnesota Tourism. So this funding is very important to the whole state, and I just ask you to pass this bill.
Appreciate that. We now have a quorum, so we'll officially call this meeting to order. Representative Fabian?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to the point of the magazines, you probably don't know this, but we make these up in my district.
I kind of knew that. Yeah. I was there when the flood happened.
Company.
I noticed you sandbagged
Polaris.
You sandbagged Polaris, but you didn't sandbag the school. Does that tell me something?
Actually, Mr. Chair, if I may, the school was sandbagged.
Can you tell a story about fish houses again?
We could, yeah. The rivals to the east, the city of Warroad came over in school buses and actually helped us sandbag the school. So we're very thankful to them. So, next up, we have Terry Mattson here, who's with the president and CEO of the Visit St. Paul organization, and he's got a little presentation for you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Mattson. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much, Chairman Gunther. Representatives, and thank you
Representative Fabian for bringing this bill forth. My name is Terry Mattson, the President and CEO of Visit St. Paul and the River Center Authority. Also co-chair of the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition, which is a group of over 100 entities and representatives throughout the state, border to border, that is very much in support of increased funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism. I'm also a member of the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. I want to thank the legislature and the governor for support in increasing the tourism budget in the last biennium. It's made us more competitive. We know we still have more work to do. There's a greater return on investment. The timing for all of this is really, really good. The economy is improving. We know it's a better environment to sell Minnesota. You've heard from Tourism Director John Edmond in a presentation, and want to reinforce some of the things that he said. We're gaining momentum, but there's still more work to be done. Marketing, tourism marketing is really an investment and not a cost to taxpayers. The return on investment and what it means in terms of jobs, all different levels of jobs, from business owners to frontline employees, it's about 250,000 jobs in Minnesota, which is a big deal. Tourism is documented as one of the better ways to create jobs in the state. It also rewards government with more tax revenues per dollar spent by consumers than typically other industries. We know that the return on investment for every $1 invested in tourism promotion returns about $8 in state and local tax revenue. So when we look at tourism, we not only know that this is a great state, there's a lot of fun things to do, but it's a way for the state to make more money, to invest in other areas. And having spent almost three decades in Duluth as CEO of Visit Duluth, I not only know how important their efforts are here in St. Paul and in the metro, I've been very fortunate to have the experience and an understanding of what it's like to not only live in greater Minnesota, but to work in greater Minnesota. It's a different environment in both places, and this is one of those areas of investment where the legislature really has an opportunity to do great things across the state, from border to border, whether you're in northern Minnesota in the forests or the prairies of southern Minnesota, metro, non-metro. We're so united in this. There aren't any battles to be fought within our industry. So we want to thank you for your support. We're an industry that's all about promotion. Nothing happens in our business until we sell it. Our customers don't just waltz through the door. You've heard some of this before. We're an industry fueled by promotion. And excuse me. So there is an opportunity to do even better. The competition is fierce. We're just to the point now where we're in the ball game. Previous to the last increase, we weren't even in the ball game. We all know we've got a great product. What we have in Minnesota is an awareness problem, and it's really a problem once you get beyond the border states. So we want to take things to the next level and really start generating more economic activity for all of Minnesota. And this bill is something that really helps us hit it out of the park in the days and months and years ahead. So happy to answer any questions. And
Representative Hancock has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to Representative Fabian. I think we found the solution to our budget problem. If we invest $50 million in advertising, we're going to get eight times $400 million in new tax dollars. Is that right? Not to be too facetious there. I understand what you're saying. But I am curious I wasn't here in the last session. What was the increase in last session? I'm assuming now that if we're going to 18,988,000, that's a $5 million increase. So right now we're at 13,988, but that was an increase from the previous session. Can you tell me what it was a couple of years ago?
Mr. Chairman, representatives, Amen. I believe the budget previous to this was about $8 million. We went up to about $13 million. So this is another $5 million request, specifically answering the question. I think we all know that at some point there is a level of diminishing returns on that investment. But I know that we're so, having 30 years experience in this industry, we're so far away from that. We're just beginning to get competitive, so the return on investment is still very, very high. We haven't come close to saturating those investments. When we do the benchmarks of comparing Minnesota to our competitive set, the neighboring states, we're a long, long way away from that. So this is an opportunity to grow Minnesota and yes, make more money that can help fuel and fund other programs, initiatives, and infrastructure throughout the state. So we'd love the opportunity to be able to do that for you.
Representative Hancock.
Yeah. Thank you, and I was obviously being a little facetious there, but having run a tire business in advertising was one area that you had some discretionary volume in the old, you know, the advertisers like to tell us that, you know, when business is low, you need to advertise, but also when business is high, you need to keep advertising, and I realize that that is really a an area that the diminishing returns is factored, but it does seem to me like quite an increase, and you know, I certainly support tourism in Minnesota. My district thrives on it and basically depends upon it, but I just want to make sure that we're getting the best bang for the buck as well. And that's more of a comment than a question, Mr. Chair, but thank you.
You're welcome. I had a marketing professor that says advertising doesn't cost, it pays. So at an 8-to-1 payback, it kind of indicates that it might. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might, you know, there's roughly 250,000 people that are employed in the tourism industry in the state of Minnesota. Sales tax receipts, about 18% of all sales tax collected are connected to tourism, you know, about $840 million per year. So that's, you know, substantial amounts of cash there. And I recognize, Representative Hancock, your concerns about that, and I'm sure that as the bill moves through the process, I see Chair Garofalo is leaving the room now, but no, I'm kidding. you know, it's got a ways to go through this process, and I think the people are aware of that, so thank you. Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, Passing. Representative Hancock, just a couple of comments on that. We're fully aware of the competition for the dollars, for your time, for the interest. There's a lot of important initiatives throughout Minnesota that need to be examined carefully, and we're just asking for the opportunity to have you give this some very serious consideration. This is one of those examples where we think, and it's not always the case, where government can operate like a business. You know, government is here to provide order, structure, and services for the citizens of Minnesota. But this is one of those instances where I think it's not a cost to taxpayers. It is an investment, and we're so far away from saturating those markets that when we treat government like a business, having been in business and done things in the private sector, businesses know that you have to spend money to make money. And that's where I think this program really and this opportunity really, really shines for all of Minnesota.
You know, it's kind of significant that you're here because it goes to show you that the metro area is a big tourism mecca for Minnesota. You have a lot of events happening here. Representative Fabian, you got anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just closing comments. If Representative Mahoney is interested, I'll be leaving sometime tomorrow morning if you want to go ice fishing and put you in a fish house. And, oh, by the way, Polaris and Arctic Cat, did I mention that they're in my district? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, Representative Mahoney, I have in good confidence that he's got a basement in his fish house.
Mr. Chair, I have one in my outhouse, too.
Anyway, any questions from the members? Any questions from the audience? Seeing no questions, who moved the bill?
No.
I will move House File 593, and now I will remove it, take it?
434, Mr. Chair.
434, okay. 434 to jobs. And with that, all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Post same sign. You're on your way to jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Okay. Where's the minutes? Representative Moran, did you read the minutes?
I did read the minutes.
Would you like to move the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative Moran moves the minutes. So, February 17th, all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed to that motion, signify by saying no. Motion passes. And now we have House File 701. Representative Tice. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Would you like to describe your bill?
I would love to.
First of all, we have to have somebody move it so we don't make the same mistake again.
Chair, I'll move House
File 701. Representative?
You want to send it?
Goes to jobs.
Jobs.
And Representative Tice, you want to describe your bill to us?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you for the opportunity to bring this bill, helping support the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs, before your committee. I have a few individuals with me today that will tell you a little more about the Boys and Girls Clubs and the impacts they have around the state with our youth and local businesses. I know many of you have seen the impacts of the Boys and Girls Clubs in your communities and the important role they have in providing support and opportunities for many of our state's most vulnerable youth. I have had the opportunity to visit and be a part of the many things that the Boys and Girls Club in St. Cloud have done in my community, going back to even before I was elected. I will say that Mr. Zachary has been absolutely a wonderful community partner in hosting different events, whether it be chamber or such, so that everyone gets to see the good work that's been done at the clubs. And when something new happens, we're there again to see what that is. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill before you today and want to say that workforce development is just a small part of the impact that the Boys and Girls Clubs around the state are having on our state youth. I turn it over to Mark Zachary with the St. Cloud Boys and Girls Club to tell you even more about these impacts.
Mr. Zachary, you give your name for the record?
Mark Zachary.
Would you please give us your testimony?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Tice. I want to thank members of the committee for past support. We've taken those dollars that you've given us and done great things for the youth of our state. There's some handouts in your packet. I wanted to just highlight one because it tells a great story. The state of Minnesota and the locations of our Boys and Girls Clubs throughout the state. 33% of club sites are located on Native American lands. 25% are located in schools and 8% are located in public housing. 52% of club sites are located in rural communities, 27% club sites in urban communities, and 21% in suburban communities. Our mission is to inspire and enable all young people to reach their full potential as productive, responsible, and caring citizens. That's a mighty task, but we've been able to do that with your help and with the funding. This request is for $750,000 a year for 2 years. I wanted to tell you, as a former Stearns County Commissioner for many years, I never saw a program as good as the Boys and Girls Club in terms of building a world's greatest workforce, which, you know, the whole preparation of young people to help them be ready for those jobs, to learn to write a resume, to dress appropriately for that interview. That's what's happening at your local Boys and Girls Clubs. And those efforts lead to jobs. And that's what one of our young youth from right here in St. Paul wants to tell you about. So I'd like to introduce Lama Ability.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lama Ability, and I'm 17 years old. I have been going to the Boys and Girls Club for almost 4 years now. The programs the club provides us really help us with our lives and how we live and how we want to be in life. The Boys and Girls Club helped me find a job that could help me support my family, help my dad pay bills. Living in public housing is really hard for my parents to make money. The club helped me with my resume building, and we did a mock interview for me to get a job. I had my first summer job. That was really nice, but then it had to end. And then now I work at White Castle. The club helped me find a location and provides transportation when I need it. The club, with that job, I helped my dad. The club helped kids with a lot of stuff in life. We come there every single day. We get to eat. The club provide food for us. It provide a place for us to be safe and feel like we belong. When I first started going to the club, I felt like I used to be behind in school. Now the club helped me a lot, bringing my grades up and motivate me to be better in life. And with these programs, they work a lot with teens to get them off the street. We come to the club every day. We work on resume building. We work with staff members to learn about new jobs. They invite different type of people from different jobs, and they come help us improve our leadership skills with programs like Keystone, Career Launch, Passport to Manhood, and Money Matters, and there's another program in Minnesota called Job Ready. Those really help teens like me succeed in life and achieve our goals and prepare us to be better role models in life to the young kids so they can grow up and be just like us one day. And I have only been in America for 6 years. With the Boys and Girls Club there for me, I learned the language a little bit faster. I'm more involved in my community, working with the YMCA, with the partnership. The Boys and Girls Club is really, it's a really good place for teens, and the money will really help us, provide for us, and help us get off the streets. I had a couple of friends that don't go to the club that messed up in life, and the club changed the way you view other people, you view your future. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, representatives. It's an honor to be here today, not only because of what this represents as a citizen to be able to come and talk about this, but to represent the Boys and Girls Club. My name is Mike Diamond. I'm the Senior Vice President and General Manager for Fox Sports North. The reason I'm here is to provide testimony of what I've seen firsthand of what the Boys and Girls Club provides to young men such as Lama here. I'm not sure they mentioned it, but he is the Youth of the Year from the Mount Airy Club, and he'll be representing their club in the State Youth of the Year competition coming up in April. For now going on my eighth year, I've been a participant in the Youth of the Year program from a judging standpoint. And I can tell you firsthand of what I've seen with young men like Lama that come through, young women who come through, who are confident, self-assured individuals who represent our state and our communities in the best way. That's because of the preparation that they've received through these training programs through the Boys and Girls Clubs. And I have to speak also for the staff members who are here, those individuals who the difference that they make in the young people's lives, because there has to be someone at the door who greets them every day that when they come in. And when you look at the graduation rates compared to the normal, I might get the statistic a little bit wrong, but it's a telling story here that the graduation rate, I believe, like in Minneapolis schools, is around 50% or hovering right around that. For kids who go to the club, the senior of the graduation is over 90%. So the impact that it has on our youth, we're paying this all forward. So I would encourage you, thank you, as Mark said, for your support in the past, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today to represent. And there's no better representation than a young man who can sit in front of a committee and speak confidently in front of a committee. That's what the preparation does. That's what we're providing for our youth. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from the membership? Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's probably not a question, because I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. So as a teenager, I began working at 13, but my second job was at, back then we were called Boys Club. It wasn't called Boys and Girls Club. And so through my high school years, I worked at a Boys and Girls Club. And for me, it was that place to be that provided me with many of the skills and relationship buildings that I think is needed. So I just want to share a story. You know, my areas in my district, so I'm glad that you're here. You did an excellent job. But I remember back, and as we know, the urban community can be a little bit different than the rural community. And we come with many challenges that maybe the rural community do not come with. And I remember one summer in my community, I was talking to the chief of police, the former chief of police, and one summer it was just chaos in the community. And as we waited the next year for summer to come, my thought was, wow, you know, I really don't want summer to come, because I know what this is going to mean for summer. And to my surprise, it was like really quiet the next summer. And I went to the chief of police and said, what did you do? I mean, what's going on that, you know, we don't have this stir up of fights and other things that's going on in the community? And the chief police said to me, well, you know, we kind of like knew who the gang members were and who was causing the havoc. And we gave them a couple of choices and made a couple of statements to them that you could either wind up finding yourself dead, right? You could find yourself in jail, or we can help find you a job. And that is what they had done. They had found young people jobs. And this is so much what the Boys and Girls Club does. It gives a place for people to be, a safe place where they can get the skills and the tools they need to be efficient at integrating into the community. It's a great place to get the tools that you need to go into the workforce. So I, you know, for something like the Boys and Girls Club that really can impact individual life, young people's lives, and just really create better outcomes for them. And as one who worked and utilized the Boys and Club for many, many years, throughout my high school years, I think this is a great investment and would really yield a really good return for our state.
Thank you. Any other, Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment rather than a question, you certainly give the classic example of a benefit to the community, and man, to learn a language in 6 years and present yourself like you do is a tremendous accomplishment. But I want to address one other issue. I've been to the Boys Club several times in Bemidji, and it's not just what it does for the boys and girls in the community. If you look, it's what it does to the community. It crosses all lines, all political lines. It crosses all racial lines, ethnicity. Everyone comes together, and it's a really community supported, funded activity center for the community. And I know the city of Bemidji and elsewhere take tremendous pride in their Boys and Girls Club. And so I think not only from helping our youth, it helps our communities. So I thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Norton.
Okay, well, now I get to be the bad guy. Boys and Girls Club's a tremendous organization, and I work on mine down in my community down in Rochester, and they are fabulous. But one of the things that we've done in this committee for the past 6 or 8 years is try to get away from giving individual pieces of legislation, but rather put in place an accountability and grants process so that all grantees follow a formula and we can show a return on investment. And so we don't get in the habit of what, when I first got here, was every nonprofit that we all had in our districts coming before this committee and other committees saying we deserve funding, and they did. I mean, that's not really the question. The question was, when we had limited funds, and even when we don't have limited funds, how do we get money to the organizations that are most effective in doing the work that we want them to? And one of the ways of doing it is by having a grants process in place that measures them and sets accountability standards for them. And we are now, for a variety of reasons, and I've talked to some of the folks from Boys and Girls Club, we're in the process of starting to see people squeaking through that process again and coming to the table, asking for them to be selected above all the other people that are going through the real grant process that we spent years putting in place. So I am not opposed to funding great organizations, and I want, and I know you have a good return on an investment, but I think perhaps if your grant did not fit in the cycle that we have, or the rules that we currently have, that maybe we need to work on changing the rules of the grants process rather than having individual folks come again back through this committee. So, you know, I have told Representative Mahoney, and I voted against him last year as chair when he came forward with his own little bill that violated the process, that I won't support it. But it's not that I don't support the organization and the great work that you do. As I said, I'm very involved in my local community when I can be with the work they do. But I just really think, and Representative Miller isn't here, you know, how do we as a committee hold the state accountable for the money that we spend? And one of the ways is through process. And so it's really on that grounds that I won't be supporting it. But I just hope that, I know some folks from the department are here, that they're listening, because if great programs like this aren't fitting the grants process, then maybe we need to make some tweaks to the process itself so that it can go through that system.
Anybody have any comment?
Just a thought about the value of being able to predict that we'll have some resources from the state to work with is tremendous. And when we go into, and we do, by the way, give very specific results based, we had 5,000 young people take part in these programs, so we track the numbers, we track the attendance. Those are unduplicated numbers, the 5,000. So we have actually shown that you put your money in the right spot. And I would say the difference is we're truly a partner in this. In the state of Minnesota has made it very clear it wants the world's greatest workforce, and we believe we're best able to meet that state goal, so it deserves ongoing non-competitory non-competition in a grant round.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. And I just talked with council, and apparently you are in the base already.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry,
you are part of the ongoing base funding already. So I guess my question is, are you trying to get another 750, or are you satisfied with the 750 currently in the base?
We're satisfied with the 750 each year for the two-year period. I was not familiar how you handled the base versus, I mean, we would certainly feel we should be in the base.
Yeah, and that's part of the confusion here. And she said you're already in the base, so
you have been funded for the 19 years I've been here.
Right. So you're not asking for an additional 750. Correct. This is just a bill affirming the continued program that we're already doing.
That's correct. And we're in our 10th year currently.
Thank you.
Okay. And I do believe Deed has an office that does look at all youth programs that we fund and go through their department also. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to bring up the fact that you were already in the base, and it appeared that you were asking for a total of $3 million over the biennium rather than $1.5 million. But Representative Norton brought that up. And to her comments about the competitive grant system that we had, and the accountability that we had, you do understand that every program that comes through here has a 5-star rating that they give themselves?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But some of us have more stars than others. I'm sorry.
That being said, you know, you've got labor organizer, you've got a contractor, you've got a insurance person, you've got a grocer, you got a pipe fitter, you got a community organizer, you've got an accountant. That what they're asking us to do, the state, is to evaluate stuff like this. You know, if you were asking me to evaluate how good a piece of pipe it is that you were putting into your building, I could do that. But the programs that you put forth, and I have visited, I have a Boys and Girls Club in my district. I have a teenage medical clinic. I have a teenage homeless center. I have a local development corporation. I have all those people in my district, and I advocate for them. But typically, I advocate to the department because they actually have people that spend their life or their working life understanding and evaluating programs. That's fine, and I think they do a pretty good job. But I have seen this year, Mr. Chair, one bill after another coming through here with no understanding of whether it's a good program or not a good program. And I'm just using you to speak up. You're not the only one that's come through. So it looks that we're trying to dismantle any kind of oversight by deed. And that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do.
Representative Mahoney, if I might, we're held to very high standards by deed, providing very detailed progress. And we're also part of a national Boys and Girls Club movement that has national youth outcomes, that we look at things like graduation rates and we track those, and we believe we're doing a good job of letting you know that your dollars are being put to very good use. And we have the statistics to prove all of that, not just the numbers served. Okay.
And sir, again, everybody has those numbers. And you are not being held, with a bill like this, you are not being held to any oversight by the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I mean, if this bill passes, all you need to do is go to deed and say, I want my check. I don't think in the statute you are required, you as your particular program, are required to give any accountability to deed. Honest to God. Deed can come up here, but I know I wrote the bill. I actually wrote the bill. So if a bill like this passes, you don't have to do anything other than ask for the check. Now, that's the same as it is for any organization that we as a department, we as a state, put a direct appropriation to. I'm not saying you're a bad organization. I'm not. I've got one and I've seen what it does. Good deal. I'm just trying to actually educate the rest of the committee here. And you just happen to be sitting in the chair. So I'm not picking on you.
I understand. I just want you to know we maybe our person who tracks all of the successes could just speak a word about how thorough the deed...
I don't really care, Mr. Sir. I that's not my point. Oh. And I get that you have decent outcomes. I also know that every other program that comes here has decent outcomes. I don't know that that's the outcome that is stellar or not. So I'm done. I've ranted and raved. Maybe I've taught somebody something. Maybe I bet you I haven't, though.
Okay, would you like to respond?
No, I think we're fine.
Okay. Okay, then we have a question from Representative Moran.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So kind of like what I heard for clarity, is what are you saying? If this bill came before us in this form, there would be no accountability pieces to it. But what I also say is that you're already in the base. And because you are in the base, I heard you also say that you are, you have really clear report backs.
Correct.
That you give to Deeds, because to show your results of the funding that you're getting. And so I don't think the intention is to just, you happen to be here in front of us with a bill for direct appropriation in this current form without any accountability pieces put in here. But, and again, you're in the base. You are showing some accountabilities. You have great outcomes. And I guess I also heard is that we've had many other people come before us making this type of request. Nothing intended for, especially for you.
Okay. As
thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Is there any other questions from members? Do we have any other testimony? If not, then does Representative Mahoney renew his motion to move this to jobs? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? See you in jobs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Bill House File Number 593, Representative Kreisha. House File 593, and I will move that, and you can begin testimony.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. So you have in front of you House File 593, which is an appropriations bill for rural broadband. I do have an author's amendment. I believe it's the A1 amendment that I'm going to make sure that's the right one that I would like to move. If I could go to House Research just to make sure that this is the amendment that would take out the 60% and 40% to the unserved and the unserved, 10 through 13. Is that correct? I want to make sure I have the right amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct based on the
yes.
high sign that Mr. Eliff gave me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where is Mr. Eliff? Oh, all the work we've done together. How are you? I would like to move the A1 amendment, or I'd like to ask the A1 amendment be moved.
Okay, I'll move the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kreisha, don't want to confuse representatives here. So when you remove the language, the 60 paragraph B, is that changing it from what we did last year, or is that keeping it the same as what we did last year, or what?
Oh, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, yes. So what I wanted to do before the appropriations came out was I just wanted to reemphasize that we want to put our unserved as much as possible ahead of the underserved. However, after seeing the appropriations, 58% went to unserved and 41% went to underserved. So the Department of Deed and Dana did a great job, and I no longer have a dog in that fight. So I would like to go back to the original intent of the law.
Representative Mahoney, to follow up?
The only other question I have an A2, which is identical. Okay.
Move the A1 amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, A1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you. And so, Mr. Chair, the bill is in the shape that I would like to present it at this time. I think we're all very familiar with what we're trying to do here, and it's an appropriation of $50 million into the broadband grant program as administered by Deed through the Office of Broadband. Just a couple of things that I'd like to highlight, and I have a number of testifiers, but I will say overall, and I was a bit skeptical of adding a layer of government, but Dana has done a wonderful job. Ms. McKenzie has absolutely done a wonderful job. And I know there was 19.4 appropriations of what was available on $44 million in requests. Being a bit of a numbers junkie and a nerd, I ran the net present value on this program, and with a total investment of the state of $44 million, the state did 19.4, and the local entities matched that of 44.6. If you run this out over 10 years, assuming a $5 million economic impact of every year, and if you take the 6,000 recipients times just a mere $600 of them paying for their services, that's $3.6 million each year. Plus, you take another 1.4 that's probably coming out as people are buying or using the online. And doing that with, and I see many of your eyes are glazing over, so just bear with me. You do a discount rate of 2%. What you find at the end of 2 years as an investment for the state on $19.4 million is a positive net present value of $25 million. If you take the whole program of $44.6 million, there's a positive net value of $312,000. What that means is, over the life of this, as money is flowing in and out, we're not losing money. And this is mere, very conservative economic development projections. Now, when you add to that that areas of my state, areas of my district and around rural Minnesota, people are still bringing their kids in from the farm or from rural settings to the libraries to use internet access to do homework. People are still on dial-up in many cases. People are still in DSL. And this program is an equalization program. That's really what it does. I can go through all the grant recipients. I'm sure you've heard that. We have an average cost of $3,186,000 to the state to bring access to the 6,000 users that were awarded in this grant. On a total, it's 7,336. So the investment's pretty good. And this is, I believe, a program that's well worth our time and our efforts, and I can go on and on and on. I know there's been some discussion about the fact that this is fiber optics. Why isn't it wireless? The reality is, and I can go into my background, I've been doing this for a long time. In 1994, I was in Ivanhoe, Minnesota, and I remember when we got dial-up access, and I could finally explain to kids, and we could talk to folks in Israel about what it was like to go to school in Israel as bus bombings were happening, and they were talking to real-life people. I moved to Pierce, Minnesota, where on Saturdays we were stringing wire and fiber optics and configuring routers and switches. I've done all this, and I've done it with as much volunteer work as I can, and it means such a great deal of difference for these schools. And then when you push this out into the homes and the families with these one-to-one initiatives and everything that we're doing, it really is what's separating us from the haves and the have-nots. I know we talk a lot about poverty, and we talk a lot about many things that apply to the achievement gap, but I can tell you, if you've ever read Thomas Friedman's book, he makes a great case that much of the divide will be between those that have access and those that don't have access, because this knows no boundaries in who we are in our demographics. So I'm very passionate about it. I can and go on and on and on if you'd like, but I have some much more intelligent testifiers as well that I'd like to introduce.
Okay, would you state your name for the and position for the record?
Mr. Chair, my name is John Dukic. I'm with the Minnesota High Tech Association and also staff the chair of the Governor's Broadband Task Force, Margaret Anderson Kelleher. Unfortunately, she can't be with us today. She's at a broadband panel just down the road. I just want to draw your attention to a letter from her in support of House File 593, which you should find in your packets. I don't have anything to add to that other than just to draw your attention to it.
Okay, thank you. Were there more testifiers?
I would like to bring up Mark Johnson, who I know from way back, and just ask him to speak a little bit.
Thank you. Would you state your name for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Mark Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of the East Central Minnesota Educational Cable Cooperative. We just call it ECMEC for short. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Being involved, ECMEC is one of the state's school district telecommunications groups. And so I'm also the co-chair of the Kennebec Broadband Initiative, which is a Kennebec county-wide effort to bring broadband to our county, which is one of the unserved, underserved areas of the state. So I've got two reasons to be extremely supportive of House File 593. On the school side of it, the fact that we want to do things in the schools with technology that we don't have the ability to send home with every student, knowing that they may or may not have access. They may have to go to a library, or they may have to do something else. Certainly impedes what we can do educationally for those students. One area to draw your attention to is right now there's a grassroots effort, a collaborative in Minnesota, referred to as the Minnesota Collaborative for Minnesota Partnership for Collaborative Curriculum, the MPCC. And we have 185 of Minnesota school districts that are actively working on creating essentially digital textbooks and digital curriculum materials with the hope at some point of replacing outdated and expensive textbooks, which, you know, conservatively would save the schools tens of millions of dollars a year with what they spend on those curriculum materials. However, what impedes us in some areas of doing that is the fact that we make a piece of curriculum rich with online resources and rich with interactivity, and we send it home. We send the students home with their devices, and they can't access the internet. They can't access that exactly which we are trying to have them use, and to replace some of the outdated, the outdated and expensive textbooks. So from a school standpoint, we're very supportive of that. On the, you know, residential and business side of it, as I'm the co-chair of the Kennebec Broadband Initiative, we were one of the applicants for the border-to-border program that didn't get funded. And we're extremely thrilled for those who did, and I, as a school representative, very, very thrilled for those who did. But there's a lot of us out there still hoping that we can do something, and we have, you know, we're working with vendor partners, and we have things in place, and are lining up things with vendors and with others so that we can be prepared should there be another opportunity. We'll be the first in line to apply for it, because we know what that means to the residents of our, to the essentially the 75% of our residents in Kennebec County who are in the underserved or unserved category.
Thank you. Is there any questions? All right, thank you. Representative Cresha, next testifier.
And thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one more, and thank you, Mr. Johnson. If I could bring up the League of Minnesota Cities as well as some constituents. And if you could let me know when I have enough support for the bill, I'll stop bringing people up.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, my name is Laura Ziegler. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. So on behalf of our 832 member cities, I have two representatives here today that would like to testify in support of House File 593. Cities have long been involved in this issue as it crosses all functions and services of a city, from economic development, education, and public safety are just a few. Because broadband access is an integral component of community vitality, the League, along with the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Association of School, the Association of Townships, as well as the School Boards Association, have submitted a letter of support that is included in your packet today. And with that, I would like to introduce Mayor Don Rasmussen from the City of Long Prairie.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm here today to talk about Long Prairie, Todd County. First of all, Todd County, as you probably, hopefully, don't know, but might, we're third or fourth from the per capita income in the state of Minnesota.
Excuse me, before you go any further, could I just have you, for the record, state your name again and who you and where you're from?
Yeah, Don Rasmussen, Mayor of Long Prairie. Long Prairie School District, because of three meatpacking plants in our area, Long Prairie School District has 35% minority in the high school and 45 to 48% minority in the elementary school. The high school is high school students are about 50%, just over 50% of the poverty level, and elementary is 70% of the poverty level. There are the kids need to travel at night from the outlying areas of our school district into Long Prairie to find a Wi-Fi that isn't busy that he can he or she can put in their schoolwork before the next day, and that's an ongoing situation. We built an industrial park approximately 10 years ago, and we have lost opportunities in that industrial park by not having high-speed broadband. There, people would like to move into that park, and they once they ask the question, and we give them, we don't have that kind of speed. It's gone. I would like to turn this over to our city administrator, Brenda Thomas, at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, member of the Zoning Committee, my name is Brenda Thomas, City Administrator for Long Prairie. And we have two companies that were impacted by the lack of internet. Impact Technologies last year was out of business for three full days, and they're a software company. It impacted their bottom dollar greatly. The other company was Long Prairie Packing. They were almost out of service for a full week. That means no telephone, no internet service for one complete week, where their processing plant still conducted business, but they were in the office not conducting the business because there was no internet capabilities. So that's where the city of Long Prairie is looking at doing a grant, looking at for grant dollars to do a fiber ring around the city of Long Prairie and to incorporate some of the outlying areas with possibly satellite internet services. But we're looking for all the grant dollars available to help us. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you two state your name for the record, please?
Yes, happy to. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Angie Dickinson, and I am the IT director for Lake County, as well as a member of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband. On behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and our other local government partners, I want to express our support for Representative Crescia's bill that would appropriate $50 million to the Border-to-Border Broadband Grant Development Program. AMC commends the 2014 legislative action that provided $20 million in funding for the Border-to-Border Broadband Development Grant Program. Demand for this program was clearly evidenced by the 40 applications received from across the state and supports the need for continued program funding. It's been said that expansion of affordable broadband internet access is to the 21st century what rural electrification was to the 20th century. Increasing access to high-speed internet service is seen as a crucial way to keep Minnesota competitive, grow jobs, and improve our state's quality of life. Border-to-border broadband is also essential for 21st century public service delivery. For example, one of the stakeholders of fiber optic networks is public safety, most importantly, FirstNet. Fiber optic networks will support the broadband wireless infrastructure of this first responder network. For Minnesota to achieve its legislatively enacted goals on broadband speed, statewide coverage, and broadband adoption, the state must make it a priority to fund broadband infrastructure development. Unserved and underserved areas demonstrate that providers have not extended services on their own to those areas. This grant program allows for partnerships with both public and private entities to build out those higher cost locations. encouraging public-private partnerships and removing barriers to local government deployment of broadband services are both key steps to achieving statewide goals and promoting economic development across Minnesota. Local units of government and providers in many cases want to work together but need clarification and direction from the authority. Many private companies have 1 to 2 year return on investment thresholds for capital build projects. Border-to-border funding may be the incentive to create working partnerships. By specifically encouraging partnerships, some costs could be locally bonded for in partial match to state dollars, and thereby spreading the return on investment over a more workable time frame. AMC would like to thank Representative Krisha for his advocacy on this issue and to the committee for allowing me to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Krisha, do you have any other testifiers?
I do.
Okay. Well, then I guess we have a couple of amendments at the desk. We have Amendment A3, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A3 would add a $50,000 or $50 million appropriation in fiscal year 2017. And so I'd like to move the A3, and then I can explain, or I can explain why first, if you'd like.
Go ahead.
Okay. Members, when I was looking at the bill and talking with some folks back home and others that are interested in this, it became apparent that we have, and I've talked to Representative Krisha about this, it's funding for 1 year. And in talking with Representative Krisha, I think he thinks it's a biennial appropriation, although I'm not sure that's clear in the language. But if you look at the MHTA letter that you got, and I've had the opportunity to sit through one of, or not sit through, but attend one of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband meetings, and also some testimony we've had here already this year, that the need really is quite large. This letter says to achieve the goal border to border would cost between $900 million and $3.2 billion, and that the governor's task force is recommending an appropriation of $200 million. And so I know the governor has a lesser appropriation, and I really had hoped that we in the House could pump up the amount from the 50 to 50 each year. And so that's what this amendment is about. And I don't know, Representative Krisha, you and I talked last night. I think this is really important, and I'm wondering if you've had any time to think about it.
Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Norton. Yes, I absolutely understand what we're trying to do with this, and we certainly want to fund this program at the best level we can. I also know the reality of targets, and I know at the same time I'm fighting for child protection dollars, and I'm fighting for lots of other areas. So it was my intent to move this in the first year, see where those funding levels come back, and then have another ask next year possibly, depending on where the funding levels. I know we had 19.4 funding of $44 million in requests. I'd like to see what those requests are going to be. If we had funded this at $100 million last time, my fear would have been we would have overfunded it, and we would have had the discussion of, well, we've already fixed the problem. So my intention and what I would ask is respectfully that we not take this amendment and that we have this discussion moving forward, but it's your amendment, and I'll respect where you're at with amendment.
Representative Norton, do you want to
Yeah.
Accept?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, before we move off of this, I guess I would appreciate a little bit of thought from some of the other members on the committee. If we could see if some other folks have any comments. We, you know, this is a program that we know we have need for. I guess I'm not sure where this is a committee that's about Greater Minnesota, and this is a major priority for Greater Minnesota. And, you know, we can send forward a recommendation of 100, and another committee can change its mind later and say less. And certainly at the end of the day, through negotiations, it can be dropped, as many bills, unfortunately, are that we've all had or will have. So if some other members have any input, I'd be interested.
Well, we have Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It occurs to me that as I sat down with my broadband suppliers in my district, the conversation we had was also that some of the cost of putting in broadband had nothing to do with the cost of it. It had to do with the installation and the requirements, such as prevailing wage was costing them considerable. And while I don't know as we have any conversation going about that, that is, they pointed out a serious cost. And so money that they were putting into that issue was not going toward actually installing broadband or fiber optics. I'm one of the fortunate people that has fiber optics in a, with a company that actually supplied it before there was any funding. And so, and I really appreciate that, but I have talked since, and I've made comment here, that I've got constituents that are having trouble using a landline phone as well as any access to internet. So it is important that we fund it. The other concern I have is if we increase it so fast, would we also have companies that were not prepared to use it? And I don't know, Representative Kreisha, if you know, are people shovel-ready to be able to supply broadband if there was more funding?
Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Keel. I don't know the answer to that. I can look at the data. 19.4 was awarded out of requests of 44. So had we funded the full 100, we would have been $56 million in excess. Would have that meant that we would have not funded this year? So I'm trying not to put us in that spot. And there's a political reality to this. I would like to get as much as we can. There's no question. The governor has $30 million in. We're above that by $20 million here with our appropriation request. But I also know the political reality of what we have to face back home with our constituents who may not entirely be ready for government programs like this is the majority leader, or minority leader, Thiessen called me out on the House floor for spending $50 million. And so I have to fight these battles in many, many places, and one of which is, so I'm being criticized for putting $50 million out there, and now I'll be asked to do $100. So the political realities of getting this done are more important to me, or the realities of getting this done are more important to me than the political fights. So what I'm asking is, let's get the $50 million, let's move that forward, and let's come back again when we've demonstrated more need and ask for the need for that as well. So that's what I'm asking for, but again, I think it's great discussion in front of the committee.
If we have a couple other questions, but before we do have another person who'd like to testify, and maybe he can answer those questions before they're asked. So if you'd come forward, Mr. Dorman, and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan Dorman. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. First, we'd like to thank Representative Kreisha for offering his bill, and with his adoption of the A1 amendment, we are supportive of the underlying legislation. So we thank him for both the bill and that amendment. We think that that amendment was a critical a change to the bill. We are very supportive of the Norton Amendment, or we think that for a couple of reasons. One, it's the this is the year where we set a two-year budget, so it's the appropriation not for next year but the year after, and so we think there should be funding in there for that second year of the biennium. In addition, I would say that last year it was really surprising, I think, to see the number of applications that were ready to go on such a new program. I think that when the applications start rolling in with whatever we come out of here, I think you're going to see a much bigger ratio than just a 2-to-1, because I think there are a lot of people waiting to see what, how did it work, and are now assembling their applications for future years. So I think there's enough pent-up demand that the applications would be very robust. So we are strong supporters of this amendment and would stand for any questions and hope you choose to adopt it.
Okay, I'm going to just ask Representative Sundin and Representative Johnson, do you have questions that would be directed toward Mr. Dorman? Okay, so is it okay if I ask for questions for Mr. Dorman first? Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Dorman. Representative Sundin, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just comments to the author. I really like this bill, but the amendment I like a little bit more. When we go back to our constituents and we start receiving phone calls about about this grant, and a lot of people are going to be very, very appreciative, and rightfully so. This is a terrific economic development tool, and we should be using it to its fullest. But the calls we're going to get are not the people that are appreciative so much. The calls we're going to get are the ones that, how come I didn't get mine? And if we can extend the message that, say, we've got another $50 million in the hopper for next year, that's going to relieve a lot of heartburn for a lot people out in the further out rural areas. So I'll be supporting that amendment.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carisha, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. Although I live, my district is literally across the line from the metro area of the metro counties. I have townships that have no broadband. I have townships that have no internet. This is about 50 miles from where we're sitting. So it's important to get this going. But we also have another issue in greater Minnesota. Some of the areas that do have broadband, it doesn't work well. I've had numerous letters from more than one company from my area all the way up to in Canobie County, where they have two businesses together. They have the voice over internet phones that once, twice, three times a week, they're inoperative. They don't work. People can't call them. They can't call out. So it's important that we get this issue fixed. But I'm a little bit against this amendment because the way technology is changing, that people could put the plans together this year for the funding for 2 years and not change, but technology has changed so much that it's obsolete. And I'd rather come back and look at this again next year, maybe appropriate more money at the time, depending on how the funding and the budget forecasts look, to get the new, put together new plans with the upgraded equipment that works better.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Pardon me? Yep. Representative Norton, I know you have a question, but we have one more person that wants to testify. Do you want to ask your question first or after?
No, go ahead and then I'll follow up.
Okay. Mr. Larson, please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, Dan Larson today, representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 29 in Greater Minnesota, represented the interests of 29 counties in Greater Minnesota here today to support the House file, the provisions contained within House File 593, border-to-border broadband fund account, and the funding. This is not an issue that our organization is real deep on. We tend to look to, we understand, but we do understand that this is a very significant issue, and we appreciate Representative Creature bringing it forward and for the consideration this committee is giving it. I grew up in the city, but I represent a lot of rural interests, so I spend a lot of time recognizing and understanding and trying to explain that there is a real difference between cultures, between the metro and a lot of what you consider to be Greater Minnesota. And this is as defining an issue as I could imagine. When Representative Johnson talks about being 50 miles outside the Twin Cities area and getting slow or no broadband service, when you talk about sending your child to a school that is literally blind in terms of the concept of internet or running a business, as Mayor Rasmussen does, which is a meatpacking center, a huge economic development part of Minnesota's economic development, and they're blind for a week. There is no greater examples of what the need is for a bill like this. So thank you for bringing it forward. The Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus supports this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Representative Norton.
Thank you very much for the discussion about the A3, and I'm either withdrawing it, or I don't know how you have it on the record, or I'm not going to offer it right now. And I'll tell you why, because I sense some political trepidation, which is really disappointing because this is a committee about Greater Minnesota, and this is a bill that's hugely beneficial to economic development in Greater Minnesota. And if ever there's a committee that should support it, it should be this one. But it's too important for me to have this go down. And what I'm going to ask you to do is, as you move forward, would you please keep this concept in mind? If there's an opportunity for this body to support moving this amount up from 50 million to 100 or 200, I think that's probably asking a bit too much this biennium. But I think 50 million a year for the next 2 years would be very beneficial to moving the economic development in rural Minnesota ahead. So I'm going to withdraw this for now, but really ask that you keep this in mind. And if there's an opportunity that you see, don't worry about the political impact of supporting something that will be good for economic development. I think you're on safe grounds on that one.
Before I let you go,
I have a second one.
So Representative Norton is withdrawing her A3 amendment, but there is something that I do want members to know, that as this does move forward, apparently if we fund this for a two-year cycle, if we put 17 on here, then the 100 million becomes part of the base and it will be back every year after that. And if that's true, then we do need to really think about that before we move forward. It's better to do it on a year-by-year basis, because as has been stated, I too know we need broadband out there, but we don't know what technology is. And so I think we can move forward without locking in anything right now.
Well, Representative Green, just the way this particular one is worded, and that's one of the reasons I'm withdrawing it, because there was some confusion about that. That just putting in next year does not mean it will be in the base forever, depending on how the bill is written or the amendment is written. So that could be fixed moving ahead, and I encourage you to look at that.
Okay. Before we have another amendment, do you need...
Yep, and I'll just be very quick. Thank you for that. And Representative Norton, when I say political landscape, I'll be looking for lots of money. If you look at the bills I'm carrying, I will try to find as many ways as I can to get this done. So thank you for that. And I am going to go back and look at that language as well to make sure I have that crystal clear. Yep. And as a Nebraska alumni as well, we get things done.
Go Big Red.
Okay, we have another amendment at the desk, the A4 amendment.
That's mine as well, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A4, and this one I am going to move officially. Anna, would you like me just to...
Yes, go ahead, please.
What the A4 does is... add a division that says that we will support the Federal Communication Commission's definition of broadband service, as opposed to stating what that is. And many of you, I'm sure, heard it on the news like I did, but I have with me the Federal Communication Commission's press release that came out, and in it, I'm going to read you this paragraph because it says it better than I can do it. It says, reflecting advances in technology, market offerings by broadband providers, and consumer demand, the FCC updated its broadband benchmark speeds to 25 megabits per second for downloads and 3 megabits per second for uploads. The 4 and 1 standard set in 2010 is dated and inadequate for evaluating whether advanced broadband is being deployed to all Americans in a timely way, the FCC found. That's quoted from the press release. And so rather than having a definition in our statute that reflects outdated FCC language seems not a good idea. So I'm just taking out that old reference and just putting in that whatever the FCC definition is, we will use in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Norton. We talked briefly on this. I like what we're trying to accomplish here. Here's my hesitancy, and here's why I would just ask that we withdraw this and give me a little bit more time to work on this between committees. If we had gone up to the 25, well, let me give you an example. We have one of the projects that was about $400,000 that was awarded, and that was at the 4 and 1 level. If we had just taken that program to just 5, it would have increased the project from the $400,000 by another $600,000. So my concern is if we get too far ahead of ourselves on that, we are going to limit the amount of people that we're going to be able to serve with this program. Knowing networks as I do, the fiber, when you put fiber optics in, that will go as fast as the equipment on either side will do. If you think of a water pipe, it's just a pipe, and it's the equipment on both sides of it that costs the money. So the more we have to spend on those, that's going to drive up the cost of these, and that will limit who we can and can't serve on this. So I would like to look at this number before we just jump up to where the FCC, they took us from 4 to all the way to 25, And I haven't run the numbers to see, had we gone to 25-3 versus 4-1, maybe we would have only been able to serve 1,000 instead of 6,000. So I haven't had a chance to look at those numbers. So that's what I'm asking, is a little bit more inspection on this before we actually adopt that onto the bill.
Yeah, we have a little bit of time, so Mr. Dorman, if you want to testify on that, that's fine.
Mr. Dorman likes the bill.
Yep. We are supportive of the bill, absolutely. But we're also very supportive of what we think is a much-needed change to the underlying legislation. I think last year that came together, you know, we put in the FCC guideline and then quoted out what it was. But in hindsight, I believe Representative Norton is exactly right that we should take that definition out. I would point out that the agency still makes the final determinations of what they're going to fund and what they're not going to fund. So there is still that check and balance, if you will. So if it doesn't make any sense to fund a particular project, I mean, I know the people that didn't get funded, like the fellow that was up here earlier, sure wish his project would have been funded. So I don't know that we would have done any fewer projects or any really different projects. I guess the agency could speak to that. But it is really important to understand what's happening and why the FCC chose to update this. And it is a rural issue. It's not a metropolitan issue. 17% of all Americans don't have access or lack access at 25.3. It sounds like a low number. However, 53% of folks in rural America do not hit that standard, where only 8% of those in the urban areas don't hit this. So this is an important change and a significant one that I really think you should consider about making sure that the money that we do invest really brings people up to, a more modern standard. The other criticism, I haven't heard it today, but some will argue that, those folks out in the rural areas, if you give them this, they still won't use it. But what the FCC found was that in areas in rural America where 25.3 is the standard, the adoption rate, people purchasing it, people using it, is very similar to that in the urban areas. So it is, a very important change, and I think would enhance what is already a really good bill.
Okay. Representative Cresha.
And just to follow up to that, and I appreciate all that, one thing I'd like the committee to consider is if we adopted this, and this is why I'd like some more time, those projects that we put in place that are going to be at the 4-1 or wherever they're going to be, they would now be underserved according to the new definition. Would that mean they get a reapply, and does that push people out? So I think there's just a lot of things we have to consider before we make a jump like this, and I haven't had time to consult with the Office of Broadband on this or DEED, and so that's all I'm asking for. But again, we're in committee process, and this is where we do our work.
Okay, Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I appreciate Representative Cresha's comments, but I think you've misunderstood what this will do. And what we're doing is just changing the definition of unserved, so it wouldn't change the type of projects that are funded. It won't raise the cost of any of those projects. The projects would be the same projects. It's just changing the definition of unserved as to those that don't have the 25 down and 5 up. What it will do is actually increase the number of applicants, because there will be less people that will meet the new standard than did the old. So I think it's going to change the number of people that apply for grants. It's not going to increase the cost of the grants. So it's definition.
Representative Cresha.
And to that, Representative Norton, this is what I would offer. And you may be very well right. I just don't know at this point. What I would offer is, if I had a chance to look at this, do my homework on it, and if that's in fact what it would do and there's no negative effects that I see, I'll be the first one to author an author's amendment at the very next committee.
Representative Norton.
Well, Mr. Chair, the process is this. I serve on this committee.
Understood.
And I brought forward a couple amendments, one of which I've given you time on, but I don't serve on that next committee. Mm-hmm. So this is my opportunity to fix the bill. And if you don't like it and you get to the next committee and somebody and you find there is an objection, you can change it. So I'm not, because we add this today does not mean the bill has, if you find a problem, you are the author of the bill, you can change it moving ahead. So I guess this is my opportunity to offer this, and I'm not here. Not that I don't doubt that you wouldn't offer it if you found, but...
Representative Cresha.
I'd appreciate his support.
Representative Norton is from Lincoln, and I'm from Columbus. I will take Representative Norton's amendment.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members, I really appreciate what you're doing. My concern with adding this on, it would increase the number of areas that would be classified as unserved, where right now we actually have areas that have no service, period. By changing that, we'd have areas that have service, mm-hmm. not up to this 25.3. They would now qualify for these grants, and more good possibility they're going to get them. And the people that actually have no internet service are still going to have no internet service.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
That's why we have the Office of Economic Development to go through those grants and pick the ones that are most appropriate. So I don't think it will, I trust the department to look through all the applicants and choose those that are most worthy.
Representative Cresha.
And thank you, Representative Johnson, Representative Norton. What I will do, I'll take the amendment, and then I will go do my homework, and I'll come back to you, Representative Norton, and we'll make sure we get the language right, because if we don't get in the next committee, I fully expect we'll be in the House floor, so we have opportunity to do this. And Representative Norton, maybe right on, and we're good, so I appreciate that.
Well, Representative Cresha, that's nice of you to do that, but I still have reservations about the same issues that Representative Johnson has, and that I would much rather see the indiscrepancies, if that's what you will, be worked out first, because I do know of a lot of people who just have none, and I would be very apprehensive about putting them further down on a list than they already are. When maybe they don't have the ability to hire a better grant writer or whatever the case may be. So, but anyway, Representative Norton, you are, do you renew your, or first of all, any other questions on this amendment? Representative Cresha.
And just a question for the committee. If I accept the amendment, are we still going to a vote? I mean, we do, okay.
Yeah. Okay, no further questions. Representative Norton, do you renew your motion to move the amendment? Okay, the A4 amendment has been moved. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
No. Okay, the motion does not carry. The amendment is not adopted. Now, back to the bill. And I will, is there any other questions on House File 593? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on 593? Seeing none, I renew my motion to move House File 593 and refer it to Jobs. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Representative Cresha, you can move your bill.
Thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the good discussion.
And I believe that's all the business we have today, so our meeting is adjourned.